Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. When Vasudev saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them among the Brahmanas as a transcendental festival. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has analyzed the wonder of Vasudev upon seeing his extraordinary child. Vasudev was shivering with wonder to see a newborn child decorated so nicely with valuable garments and gems. He could immediately understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared, not as an ordinary child, but in his original, fully decorated, four-handed form. The first wonder was that the Lord was not afraid to appear within the prison house of Kamsa, where Vasudev and Devaki were interned. Second, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, he had appeared from the womb of Devaki. The third point of wonder, therefore, was that a child could take birth from the womb so nicely decorated. Fourth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Vasudev's worshipful deity, yet had taken birth as his son. For all these reasons, Vasudev was transcendentally jubilant, and he wanted to perform a festival as Kshatriyas do to celebrate the birth of a child. But because of his imprisonment, he was unable to do it externally, and therefore he performed the festival within his mind. This was just as good. If one cannot externally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can serve the Lord within one's mind, since the activities of the mind are as good as those of the other senses. This is called the non-dual or absolute situation, Advaya Gyan. People generally perform ritualistic ceremonies for the birth of a child. Why then should Vasudev not have performed such a ceremony when the Supreme Lord appeared as his son? Om Gyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna. So this is a kind of an amazing verse and purport. There's 2 points that really stuck out for me in this purport, so I'm just going to speak about them. So we see that Vasudev is feeling this wonder at seeing Krishna's transcendental birth. And it's, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Janma karma chame divyam. He says, my birth, my activities, my appearance, my whatever I do is transcendental. So what Krishna does contradicts our mundane intelligence, our mundane experiences. It's just like, you know, you have a tribal person who's lived in the jungle all his life, and you take him out of that jungle. He has, and he's he sees a plane flying from the runway of an airport. And his experience of metal is only for cutting things, killing things. But then he's seen metal being flying in the sky. So this goes against his experience, because logic is based on our experience. But when he's educated in science, how it can be manipulated, then he'll understand. So it's based on knowledge. So when people read about Krishna's pastimes, they get kind of somewhat bewildered. Like, how can a personality, God, come in this way, behave in this way? And if you compare Krishna's appearance, Krishna's activities to any of the avatars who come to this earth, Krishna stands up very uniquely. The way he performed his pastimes in Vrindavan, the way he killed the demons, what he did on planet is so different from what Lord Ram did, because Lord Ram was Purushottam, he was Purushottam in the sense that he followed strictly the society conventions of the day, whereas Krishna didn't. So this sense of wonder, one definition I came across was a feeling or amazement and admiration caused by something beautiful, remarkable, or unfamiliar. So Vasudev, he's in prison with his wife, and he's seeing his child born first as a four-handed form, very beautiful, with all the garments and gems. And, you know, obviously that goes against our normal experience. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes Vasudev's wonder. There's four aspects to it. He says that Krishna wasn't afraid to be born in Krishnakamsa's prison. Krishna is all-pervading, but he appeared in Devaki's womb. Krishna appeared wonderfully decorated, and Krishna, who is Vasudev's worshipful deity, appeared as his son. So it's Krishna who is the absolute truth, who the mantras of the Vedas are seeking out, but they don't sometimes explain clearly, who yogis meditate for thousands and thousands of years. He's appeared as the son of Vasudev, and he's appeared in a prison. He first appeared in the womb of Devaki. You know, Krishna can't be catched, he can't be caught, but he's appeared in the womb of Devaki. He's appeared so wonderfully decorated. And Krishna, who is the worshipful deity of Vasudev, has appeared as the son of Vasudev. So this is causing a sense of wonder, bewilderment to Vasudev. Obviously, we know that Vasudev is a great devotee. He's an eternal associate of Krishna. But still, due to the influence of Yogamaya, he's feeling this sense of wonder. So Prabhupada explains in Krishna book that this pastime of Krishna appearing in the coming as a four-handed form first, coming the way he did, Krishna is establishing the fact that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that no other personality can appear like he did. So it's so when people read Krishna's pastimes, they see it's contradictory according to mundane logic and experience. But Krishna likes this situation where it appears contradictory. For him, it's normal. For him, it's fun. But for people on planet Earth, they find it bewildering. You know, it's like, I remember a few years ago when someone asked one sannyasi, you know, like, these personalities in previous times, how could they do such amazing things, you know? He couldn't believe it. And he was someone who was, you know, who read Vedic literature. He wasn't a devotee, but he was someone who was like a mundane follower. But he didn't believe, not just Krishna, but like someone like Hanuman who lifted the mountain. You know, because he couldn't believe it because he couldn't do it. He had no experience of a monkey lifting a mountain when the monkey took the mountain to Sri Lanka for Lord Ram. So it went against his experience, his logic. So for Krishna, there's no contradiction. For the residents of the spiritual world, there's no contradiction. Even for the personalities from the demigod planets, there's no contradiction. Only on this planet, we find it generally contradictory because we don't have experience of these things. But then there's so much within our experience we haven't experienced, we haven't seen, and it's still going on, you know? Like, I remember when I was young, you know, like, I'd read about satellites and spaceships going into space, and I'd think, how is that possible? You know, how can they get, like, you know, something to go up in space and stay there? Or what's going on? Then, you know, obviously when you went to school, you learn about this principle. There's a science behind it, why it works. So Krishna, he's tasting all the situation that he's doing, all these contradictory things. He gets taste from it. It gives him amusement. It's entertaining from him. So in the mundane world, people, when they say contradiction, it kind of disturbs them. Because generally people in the material world, they like to think they're God, they want to lord it over material nature. So when something happens like this, it disturbs them. And they think, you know, what's going on? This is going against my experience. So then they try to work it out. So you have great scientists and philosophers speculating, trying to figure it out. Then they get great satisfaction. But Krishna, he's already worked it out. So he's already getting, he doesn't need to, you know, he doesn't get disturbed by it. For him, it's fun. But for people in the mundane world, they it disturbs them so much. So, and, you know, then they try to work it out. And, you know, it just really messes up their whole paradigm. And we can see that even in Krishna's pastimes, we can read how Lord Brahma, when he wanted to test if Krishna is God, he took away the cows and the cowherd boys for 1 year. Then Krishna expanded himself into those forms. Then when Lord Brahma came back after 1 year, Lord Brahma was amazed. He had a sense of wonder, you know, what's going on here? How is this possible? Then he understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not just Krishna, not just, and there's another pastime when Lord Brahma, he went to Dwarka, and he went to see Krishna to give a report of what's going on in the universe. And when he was there, he saw so many different Lord Brahmas. He saw Brahmas with 5 heads, 10 heads, 1,000 heads, 1,000,000 heads, 10,000,000 heads. And he couldn't believe it because he thought he was the only Lord Brahma. According to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we understand that our universe is one of the smallest, and there's other universes which are much more larger than our universe. Ours is just like a dot of sand on a beach. There's so many universes, so much more bigger, and therefore there's different dimensions. Whereas Lord Brahma thought when he saw this, he couldn't believe it. And Lord Brahma is the most intelligent person in the universe. He has 4 heads, you know. And even he couldn't understand this. And he's the first person to receive Vedic knowledge. You know, it says in Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hrida Adi Kaviya. He's the first person to receive Vedic knowledge. Even he was bewildered. Krishna appearing as the charioteer of Arjuna. Because as we know, when you're a charioteer, the person behind you, he has to kick you on the shoulder. So to indicate, I want to go in this direction, I want to go in that direction. So even that's bewildering. God, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, you know, we all want to serve, he comes as the devotee, a servant of his own devotee. So that in itself is also amazing. It also causes a sense of wonder, a source of bewilderment. So, you know, it's like, you know, I remember when I went to this bookshop in India, I was in Calcutta, and it was a quite prestigious bookshop. You know, a lot of even devotees go there to buy books. So I asked him, you know, where do you have these particular books? And all the Vedic scriptures, they were in a section called mythology. So that means it's not true, it didn't happen. Whereas all the different religions, they were accepted as truth. They didn't have mythology, but the Vedic scriptures were under mythology because everything that happens within causes a sense of wonder, causes a sense of bewilderment. It's not possible. It contradicts our logic. So, you know, and these are people who study the Vedas. These are people who so-called live by it. But for devotees, there's no problem like that. We accept it as self-evident truth because we don't get bewildered by these things. And like, this is one interesting story when Narada Muni, he was traveling to Vaikuntha, and on the way, he met a brahmana and he met a cobbler. So when he met the brahmana said to him, you know, can you ask Lord Narayan, that when will I get salvation? So Narada Muni said, no problem, I'll ask him. And this brahmana was very pukka. He was following all the principles of the Vedas strictly. He was very pukka, you know, who take his baths at certain times of the day. He was very pedantic about following Vedic principles. So as he was going, he met a cobbler. So the cobbler also asked the same question. Can you please ask Lord Narayan, when will I get salvation? And obviously the cobbler, he's not trained as the brahmana. The brahmana has so much qualification, so much training. So when he went to see Narayan, and then he asked Narayan, the brahmana and the cobbler were asking, when will they get salvation? So now Lord Narayan said, the cobbler will get salvation in his next birth. This will be his final birth, life appearance, and he'll get salvation when he dies. Whereas the brahmana, I don't really know what's happening with him. So when Narada Muni heard this, he thought, you know, how is this possible? You know, the brahmana is following you know, because the Brahmanas are due to Krishna. Krishna loves the Brahmanas and the cows. So how is that possible? How do we understand that? So Krishna said, and the cobbler, you know, he's not qualified as the Brahmana. So Lord Narayan said, you know, just say to, when you, you just ask them, if they ask what I'm doing, say to them that I'm pushing an elephant through the hole of a needle. So you have a needle, you have this little hole in the thing. And then see their reaction, then you'll know for yourself. So then he went back to earth and he met the Brahman and the cobbler separately. And they asked, what is Lord Narayan doing? And he said, Narada Muni said, you know, Lord Narayan was pushing an elephant through the head of a needle. So when the Brahmana heard this, you know, he said, this is absurd. Why would you be doing that? This is nonsense. And then he could see that the Brahmana had no faith in Krishna, Lord Narayan doing it or being able to do such a thing. But then when he asked the cobbler was like, wow, this is amazing. My Lord is so amazing. He can do so many wonderful things. So immediately Narada Muni understood that the Brahmana really didn't have any faith in Krishna, in Lord Narayan. He had no strong conviction because he tried to understand God through limit God through his own understanding. He thought God can only behave in such a way. But the cobbler wasn't like that. He understood that God can act in any way he wants and it's perfect and complete. You know, he can come in and steal something and it will still be perfect and complete. Whereas the Brahmana couldn't comprehend that. So, you know, so this principle of understanding, accepting Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, even the so-called things that which appear contradictory, requires pure faith. And pure faith is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that, you know, I have faith that by performing devotional activities, all my needs will be looked after, not my wants, because wants can be so many things and not necessary, but my needs will be looked after. So you have pure faith. So I remember there's this pastime in Prabhupada Lilamrita where Prabhupada, he's traveling with his disciples on a train, and I believe they stop off at Delhi, because when you travel for India, there's so many, it's such a big country. And it was like, I think in the middle of the night, and Prabhupada said to his disciples, I think it was Gurudas, I'm not sure. He said, I want you to get off this station and go and start a center. So when I read this, I was thinking to myself, you know, they don't know the country, they don't know the language, they don't have any contacts, where they're going to sleep, where they're going to eat. And they just got off. They had so much faith in Prabhupada, you know, they didn't think about these things. So this faith is very much needed. It's pure faith. Not just having pure faith in Krishna, but having pure faith in the spiritual master is also the same as having pure faith in Krishna. So these devotees had faith in Prabhupada, that when, you know, we're going to get off the station, Krishna will take care of all our needs. So even though, I mean, if someone was to read that, I mean, when I read it, I was shocked. I thought this is a bit bewildering, you know, why Prabhupada put them in that situation. It causes a sense of wonder. So whatever Krishna does causes a sense of wonder. And sometimes his devotees can also do the same. So this is one principle I found. I was focusing on the element of wonder in reading Krishna's pastimes, even Krishna's devotees' pastimes. There's one pastime I was remembering. Someone was telling me a while ago how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was in Calcutta and he had to go to this Durga temple because the Brahmanas there were criticizing Gaudiya Math, criticizing him, Krishna consciousness. And you know these Brahmanas, they were they were followers of Durga Devi, so they were called Shakti followers, and they believed that Durga Devi is the supreme personality of Godhead. So, and they were being very blasphemous to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to the Vaishnavas. So as soon as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't say anything. As soon as he went in, he paid his respects to Durga Devi, and as soon as he did that, the deity of Durga Devi cracked. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to the Brahmanas, because they were in shock, they think, what's going on? We've been worshipping her so nicely for so many generations, and she just cracked as soon as this person came. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, what you didn't realize was, that Durga Devi left this deity years ago due to your offenses. And when I came, she allowed it to be cracked. So just to show to you, you guys have no faith. You're offenders. You have no faith, and you don't really understand scripture. So when you hear parson like this, it causes a sense of wonder. And there's so many parson that Prabhupada had. So, second principle I really liked in his verse was the principle of Vasudev. Even though he's in prison, you know, he has no facility. He's a king. He's locked up in a cell. He has practically nothing. He's able still, in his mind, to mentally do a festival within his mind to celebrate the birth of Krishna. He gives 10,000 cows and distributes among the brahmanas. Because it's you know, obviously 10,000, even that causes a sense of bewilderment. You know, how is that possible? But such facility existed in Vedic times. So this principle is that Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada terms this word Krishna consciousness, and consciousness means to engage our mind, to be absorbed in Krishna. Because we're trying to engage our mind, our body, our words and senses in Krishna's service. But for all of these things to work, we first have to get the mind absorbed in Krishna. So it's like, you know, you can engage the body in something, but if the mind is not really there, it's not really perfect, it's not complete. It's just like when you give a gift to somebody, you know, you think, oh, it's his birthday, let me just give him a gift. But you're not doing it with love, you're not doing it with devotion. But if that person, if he was able to see what's going on in your mind, how much would he appreciate? He wouldn't really appreciate, because there's no love in that, there's no focus in that, there's no absorption in that gift being given to the person. So in Krishna consciousness, we try to engage our mind. So our mind becomes, the more we engage it, the more it becomes purified, and the more it becomes absorbed in Krishna. So then naturally, when we do our activities, it becomes much more perfect and pleasing to Krishna. So that's why Prabhupada, you know, he gave so many services. You know, he gave so many services for devotees to do to keep busy. You know, Prabhupada would say, you know, idle mind is a devil's workshop, because our mind at the moment is not pure. It's a condition. So it doesn't naturally think of Krishna. So to do that, it has to first be trained. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur will talk about, you have to beat the mind so many times to get it to think of Krishna. So the mind, you know, even though it's material, it's conditioned, we don't neglect the mind, we don't reject the mind, we engage that mind in Krishna's service to purify it. So, you know, Arjuna talks about this whole thing in Bhagavad Gita. He says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 35, he says, the mind is so difficult to control. You know, it causes so much problems. And you know, the yoga practice you just described is too difficult. So Krishna replies to it. He says in chapter 6, verse 36, he says, for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by right means is assured of success. That is my opinion. So Krishna is saying to us, he's saying, one who practices, by practice and regulation, one is able to control the mind. It may not happen straight away, but it will happen gradually. And Krishna does that by giving rules and regulations in the Vedas. Because if you refer to the Vedas, there's so many ways to engage the mind. There's so many. Sometimes it's like, you know, you have very difficult yoga postures you have to do. You do fire sacrifices. There's so many unlimited ways, because the jiva has so many unlimited desires. But Krishna gives these rules and regulations to establish, for this basic principle is to always remember him and never forget him. So in the Padma Purana, this is described. So Prabhupada would always say, always remember Krishna and never forget him, because this is the whole point of the rules and regulations. Because when you're doing it, gradually you become more conscious of what you're doing, why you're doing it, And, you know, you get realization, okay, I need to maintain this. So the mind, the whole point of Krishna consciousness is to like to catch the mind. Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to catch the mind. Otherwise, you're not really Krishna conscious if you don't really absorb your mind. And absorption from the state of going from a conditioned mind to a mind absorbed in Krishna is a process. So when we do that by following the process of bhakti yoga. So the mind, as explained, is the pivot. The mind is connected to the body, is connected to the senses. And but when the mind is engaged, we're able to engage the body. So the mind is just, mind just deals with sankalpa and vikalpa. It rejects and it accepts. And the intelligence just tells the mind, this is that, but it doesn't make a choice, it doesn't make a decision. That only the mind does. So we can't reject the mind, we have to deal with the mind, because the mind is also a real thing, it's also one of the elements of Krishna's creation. And by engaging the mind in Krishna's consciousness, then the mind becomes purified, and we naturally become more absorbed. So when we hear of this, this brahmana who was cooking ghee for Krishna in his mind, he was cooking sweet rice, sorry, and he burnt his finger. Because he was at such a state of consciousness that he was able to directly experience Krishna in those pastimes in his mind. So it's a gradual process. So, you know, sometimes in the mundane sphere, people say, you know, you don't really need to, because the whole goal of material civilization is really to become free from our situation to uplift ourselves, or materially, not really spiritually. So when they hear of this, this principle of regulation, of restriction in the Vedic philosophy, they're kind of turned off by it. They say, you know, this is kind of like primitive. It's kind of holding us back from freedom, you know. So this is like an impersonal concept. It's not really, it's quite sinful, because what they're saying is they're going against what they're following naturally in their situation. For example, you know, when an athlete is training, he has to restrict himself from certain things. He has to have a certain diet. He has to train certain times of the day. He has to, you know, come to training at certain times of the week. So there's restriction. And without restriction, I mean, nothing can really happen in this world, you know. If everyone turned up at work whatever time they wanted, how much could happen? So, and the Vedic concept is by having restriction, restricting your mind, restricting your senses, restricting your activities, then that will lead us to become free from the material entanglement. Whereas the modern concept is, well, you know, we want to become free from restriction. We want to become free from all these things. But they don't really understand freedom, because what they do is leads to hedonistic lifestyle, and they become more under the control of their senses. They become very impulsive. Whereas personalities who follow the Vedic principle, then they don't have that problem. So the Vedic process, the Vedic concept is perfect, because it identifies that Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. The Vedic concept is perfect because it correctly identifies that the mind needs to be regulated according to the Vedic principles, and to purify it, and which will eventually lead to it being purified, which will then give us control of ourselves, of our mind, and then engage in devotional service and eventually go back to Godhead. So the mind is always looking for taste, because the soul is Satchidananda, so the soul's not static. So what happens, because the soul is in a conditioned state, it tries to taste through the mind. And because it's polluted, it gets attracted to mundane things, because we're always thinking about it. So the Vedic principle is all about training the mind to be more focused and trained to practice restriction and develop taste for Krishna. So, you know, we practice Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam to daily practice to develop attachment to Krishna, so we can control our senses, and then basically we can make, then from that we'll be able to become more absorbed in the mind. So this principle of engaging the mind in, you could say, samadhi, or, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness at the mind level, is a very exalted state, and it takes practice. But first, we should at least try to restrict the mind by concentrating on transcendental activity. So then eventually, the mind will become purified and we'll be able to experience these things within the mind. So this is a very amazing purport and verse, because it shows that even, you know, not even Vedic times, even you hear, you know, I remember hearing there was devotees who went to Spain, I think it was in the 80s, and it was during the time of a dictator called Franco, and he had imprisoned all the devotees there. And the devotees, you know, they were so determined that they would wake up for Mangalarti, and then they would imagine in their mind that, you know, the prison guards would be singing, and they'd be worshipping a deity, pretending to worship a deity. They'd be singing the songs. They didn't have any bead bags, but then they would chant on their fingers, and they would pretend, they would kind of say, they would imagine this Tulsi Devi, they would circumambulate it. So they were doing all these things, and they were practicing Krishna consciousness in their mind. So that situation didn't allow them to not be Krishna conscious. So basically, and you know, there's one personality, I can't remember the name, but basically when he was traveling for the Eastern European bloc countries, he would practice his spirituality in incognito, without devotee association. You know, sometimes he would go, when he was traveling on trains, he'd be chanting in the toilets. You know, he couldn't carry bead bag with him. He'd always be trying, in his mind, he'd be worshipping Krishna. So he was absorbed in this type of consciousness. So the external situation didn't affect him. It didn't restrict him in his service. So these two principles I found really amazing, the sense of wonder and the mind being engaged despite our external situations. So I'll finish here. If anyone would like to make any comments or ask any questions...